Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at InternetAdvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. Hi, this is Foster Brown. Delighted to have you join us here on the Internet Advisor. And yes, we are recording our program every week. We may be preempted by Michigan State football on our flagship station, but we got a chock full program for you every week. And this week, we're going to be talking about good citizenship at Microsoft, where they're helping young people get ahead in very important ways. And we'll be talking about, well, Foster the Barbarian and his ability to destroy computers. So glad that you found us with the Internet Advisor. And you may be one of our faithful listeners, been around for a long time, and know that on Sunday nights you can go to our website, InternetAdvisor.net, and download our podcast. Or you may be even smarter than that. You've got yourself a subscription to our podcast through the iTunes Store or one of the other apps that are out there on any one of the different phone platforms where you can subscribe to podcasts. But again, if you go to InternetAdvisor.net, there's all sorts of ways of bringing our program down. But I know you found that because you're here listening to our program. So to spread the good news that we are on every week doing our program, and the whole crew is with me here today. And that's Mr. Gary Baker. Good to have you here, Gary.
It's great to be here, as always.
And Mr. Ed Riddell.
Recovering, yeah. But feeling much better.
Thank you.
That's good news.
My voice is no longer two octaves lower.
No more Barry White impressions.
That's
huh?
right.
And then the master of all things Apple as well, Cal Carson, is with us. Thank you so much, sir.
Hello, Americans. This is not Paul Harvey.
He has got a screwdriver in hand, taking care of the victim.
So
we'll talk about that.
So are we talking about it now?
Oh, well, we'll kind of sample it now. You may have seen, if you looked at our homepage that I put up there, a bunch of things we're going to be talking about today. As a matter of fact, in just a little bit, we'll be talking with Shelley Stern-Gratch, who is with Microsoft, about their Youth Spark. Really great program they have as a corporation to help young people throughout the country and get them going. As a matter of fact, working in the Detroit area with Focus Hope. But then also, near the bottom of the list, it's the Barbarian Laptop Destroyer. I thought I would take that name from now on because, yes, ladies and gentlemen, not only have I succeeded in putting a good Dell to sleep, but for a brief while there, I thought I had put my MacBook Pro to sleep as well.
Bet you were sweating putty balls, baby, weren't you?
You saw the emails.
You told us we could start to tease you.
Yes, yes. You know,
there was not much teasing going on.
They were saving it up for today, folks.
Yeah, heart
you,
well,
you wait.
Yeah. And, although we did, there was taps played.
Yes,
but
thank
then Reveille.
You.
Yes. And then Reveille, it's revived.
It's revived, exactly.
Lazarus.
What happened, Foster?
Well, what happened basically was that I was rushing on Friday to get back home from a job. And I don't normally, now I have a laptop, but as we've talked on the air, I really use it as a replacement for a desktop.
Right.
Okay. And
well, we all do, I think, don't we?
I think pretty much all of us do that. Yeah. I do have a desktop at home as well that Jenny used, one of the old ones we had.
Yeah, but that's because you gave it to her when you replaced yours with a laptop.
You're absolutely right. So I was walking back into the building quickly, and in my I had come out of the studio I was working in and just snapped it closed, so it was like in sleep mode, put it in my bag, and then I had a travel mug of coffee, which I had the top secured on, he said.
Yes.
Confidently. Only there's a little button on top of it that gets pushed. And what happened was, I was walking, grabbed my bag, and I was walking from the car quickly into the building to pick my wife up, and I had the coffee mug in the same hand. And as I'm walking in, I noticed I'm leaving a trail of coffee, and I thought, oh, darn, this thing's leaking. But I thought it was like leaking directly on the floor, only to look down and to see the light on the computer starts going blink, 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 blink. And I realized that the coffee had filled the bag.
And it was dripping from the bag.
So you're dripping from the bag.
So you didn't have like a Pepsi syndrome where you actually accidentally spilled your coffee on it. You had a leaking beverage.
Now these guys will remember that years ago, matter of fact, Cal, was just before I moved to the Mac. Was a little over 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. I was coming back. I was in Philadelphia. I had been doing a job there. Deathly sick that night. And in the morning, I was getting ready for the plane, and I was just having a cup of tea to settle my stomach. And there was a case where I had it. I should not have had it that close to my computer. And I just accidentally bumped it, and it spilled on the Dell Inspiron.
And we thought that was just an excuse to buy a new computer.
Yeah, that's right.
We attributed malintent.
Now you know. There was no malintent. I'm just plain clumsy. And I thought, wait, what other platforms can I go for? I've got the PC. I've done the Macs. How about Linux? We got a Linux device I can do?
What, you could spill coffee on? I must say that your laptop, your Mac smells really nice. You don't even need a Glad air freshener here. It smells like coffee. Yeah.
Dark Colombian with right. A little cream, I
That's
think.
That's exactly yeah. it.
That's what it smells like.
It's back to life, though. So it sparked out, and then yes. A couple days later, after you let it dry, you took it to the Apple Store, and they basically said...
That afternoon...
Scorched death.
When it was what had happened was I immediately reached down and turned the power off
right.
because... I knew that as soon as I could get the power off, I could. But the problem was, Cal, I couldn't tell whether the power was off at that point because the light on the front of it had been blinking on and off.
And there's no way to pull the battery.
No, you can't pull the battery on these Macs.
Unless you pull the back. And
yeah, you have to pull the back off. So there was no, like on the old on the other ones, the old Dell, for instance, I got to pop the battery off the back and pull the power out. That done. But in this case, I couldn't do that. So I didn't know whether I had shot it off or not.
Sometimes you just have to stop and take a breath and slow down.
Yeah.
Now, what about some of those...
I was in panic mode at that point.
Urban legends that you could just take your laptop and throw it in a bag of with rice, and it'll help remove the moisture out of your...
My sister had said that I didn't have that much rice. I didn't even have kitty litter enough to do that.
Kitty litter's a good one, too.
Well, when we were camping, remember, I drowned my iPhone.
Yes.
See, folks, there's three for three.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
And,
another device.
You went to the Apple Store.
Yes.
And they told you it was scorched, and it was $750.
Yeah. That was like the base price for handing it over to them, and then they would, for that price, replace whatever needed to be replaced and give it back to you brand new. Guaranteed.
Yes.
And so, and it's a good deal in that sense, but... I would say it was like being with the Wizard of Oz, you know, when the genius says, I'm going back to look at this. And he comes back and says, I've got some bad news for you. Well, we'll tell you some more of the bad news that's involved, especially if you've got an insurance policy and you think it covers that. I've got news for you that ain't good. Anyway, coming back in just a moment, we're going to talk with our first guest today, and that is Shirley Stern-Gratch from Microsoft.
Shelley.
Shelley, pardon me, talking about Youth Spark. And that'll be coming up in just a moment. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. Hi, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson in studio. And we're delighted to be welcoming to our program right now somebody who is, I would say, a hometown lady. She's from this area, but is coming to us now as a representative of Microsoft, and that is Shelley Stern-Gratch, who is citizenship, and Public Affairs Director of Microsoft. And Shelley, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Welcome to your hometown.
Thank you, Foster. It's great to be talking to friends in Detroit.
That's so nice to be connecting with you, especially on this occasion where we're talking about some really neat citizenship. It's kind of nice to step out of talking about operating systems and devices and all the other stuff that's flying around to talk about a corporation that is really rolling up its sleeves to help young people. Could you tell us about Youth Spark and what that means in terms of what Microsoft's doing?
I'd be delighted to. Well, as you probably know, Microsoft has been involved in global philanthropy well over 30 years, and we've hosted and supported a large number of nonprofits in over 100 countries that we live in and where we work. Youth Spark, however, is a new initiative, global initiative, that was announced about a week ago. It's company-wide, and our goal is to really address what we're calling the opportunity divide, which is really the gap for those who have access, skills, and opportunities to be successful and those who don't. And this is a situation that's facing young people around the world. Our goal is to try to create opportunities for 300 million youth and about 75 million in the U.S. and Canada over the next 3 years, and that'll be done through partnerships with governments, nonprofit organizations, and business. And we're bringing together a range of new, existing, and enhanced programs again, around the world for youth to help tackle this critical issue.
Now, when you say creating opportunities, tell me what kind of things you mean by that.
Sure. What we're looking to do, and it's a very broad spectrum program, but let me kind of focus in three key areas. What we're really trying to do is enable students to finish their education, complete, in our case, complete high school in the U.S. is a huge issue, as you know, about a 50% graduation rate. We're looking to help give them the skills they need for employability, 21st century digital literacy skills. Many young people don't have access today to technology or computers or even the curriculum to, you know, work through a PC and certainly the kind of programs that they would need either as a health professional, working in an office, working at a bank. Everything is, as you know, technology-based. And then the third area is to help inspire young people to become entrepreneurs, because we really believe it's not just about helping somebody get a job, but it's about somebody taking the creativity that they have and creating a business, which then creates more jobs. So we're looking at education, employability, and entrepreneurship.
Okay, education, employability, and entrepreneurship. Three big E's there.
Now, three big E's.
As I noticed that, by the way, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net, there is a link to a couple things, to the YouthSpark home site. And then on the YouthSpark home site, you'll also see that there's a YouthSpark hub.
Exactly.
And it's interesting. There are three levels of kids that you're working there with as well. So explain that, because you've got kids K to 12, 13 to 18, and then the young adults.
Sure. So basically, and I was getting to the three areas, you know, going a little deeper into your question. We have three areas, and let's start with the YouthSpark hub. Basically, the YouthSpark hub, as you mentioned, is an online space for young people to explore and access globally, again, the services, programs, and resources that Microsoft has, as well as those provided by our selected nonprofit partners in the areas of education, employment, and entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to the hub, and I think it's a very friendly site.
Yeah.
One of the things that we've tried to do is to really make this, you know, very open, very easy to navigate, again, because it's a global site. And so if you're a, let's say, an elementary school student, you know, one of the areas that you might want to explore is, how do I learn about gaming and programming? So Microsoft, we then would take you to a free program that we have called Kodu, which teaches young people how to program and how to build their own games. So that might be an example for an elementary school student.
That is really cool. That is really cool. By the way,
as you go through with teens, you know, we get things to be a bit more sophisticated.
Yeah.
And then obviously with the young adults, we would link you more to some of the entrepreneurship programs that are available.
I've got to say something right now. And I don't know if the word metro is entirely out of vogue completely, because I know that. But the interface, folks, on this site, if I'm using a Windows phone right now, and I've been doing a little work with Windows 8, some of the pre-releases, the site loads kind of like Windows 8 does.
Yeah.
When you click on the different tiles, it's fascinating. You see that?
Yeah. That whole new interface, and again, I'm not really the best technical person, but I certainly am a user, has made things so simple for the consumer.
I agree.
It's just a blast. It's great to work with.
It's really neat, folks. If you want to get a little taste of what Windows 8 will look like, I think, go to this site, because of the live tiles that it has, much like the live tiles. Pardon me. I couldn't help but comment on that as I was using and navigating through.
Oh, thank you. We love your enthusiasm.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And I'm looking forward to the release of Windows 8. But let me get back to, you're talking about some of the things that you're doing with the youth around the world and in the United States as well. Could you talk specifically about, you had a project going here in Detroit with Focus Hope, talking about some of the things that you're doing with that wonderful organization that's been working with communities here.
So Focus Hope is a fabulous organization.
Oh,
obviously, people in Detroit are very, very connected to it. Microsoft has been partnering with them probably about 5 or more years. Our general manager, John Fickany, who you might have met, John runs what we call our Heartland District, which is based in the Southfield area.
Well, I've known John for years, back before he joined Microsoft, and what a wonderful resource you got there.
What a wonderful guy he is, and incredibly passionate and committed to giving back to the community, as well as a terrific businessman.
Yep.
So John's been on the board of Focus Hope, which is, you know, one piece of our connection there. We've also, over the past, I think it's 5 or 6 years, donated just about $6 million of in-kind software to the organization so they can build up their own infrastructure. But more importantly, and how it connects to YouthSpark, one of the programs that we've worked with Focus Hope on is working with young people on developing their own digital literacy skills. And again, that goes to that employability capability that we need to develop. And there's a great story about a young man, Brian Robinson, who worked with Focus Hope, and he became certified as a Microsoft Office specialist And now he's working for Ford as a software tester and a data coordinator on the Ford Sync, which you may know is a collaboration between Microsoft and Ford Company.
Yeah, that's a wonderful operating system that's in all Ford cars now.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
It is.
It's terrific.
It is.
Yeah, and so Brian is an example. I mean, his one case example of what we try to replicate. You know, for 75 million. Young people over the next 3 years in the United States and Canada, being able to figure out, you know, where's that passion, where's that connection for technology. In his case, it was for employability. For somebody else, it might be, working with one of our nonprofits that we work with, like the Boys and Girls Club of Southeast Michigan, or with a Focus Hope, or with a new partner of ours this year as part of Youth Spark City Year, which is in Detroit.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. We just had somebody on talking about that a little while back.
They're another fabulous organization. Yeah. So one of the things that we've done through this Youth Spark announcement in the U.S. is basically create national partnerships with five nonprofits. So I mentioned Boys and Girls Clubs. I mentioned City Year, Junior Achievement, NIFTY, which is a network for teaching entrepreneurship, and Year Up. Mm-hmm. And so across the country in many large urban areas and several of what we call our key metropolitan areas, we will have, you know, one, two, three, or more of these five nonprofit partners, and that will be our kind of our critical mass and nucleus of working with the young people to deliver a lot of the Youth Spark programming capabilities.
Wow. Shelley Stern Gratch is with us and who's speaking with us from Citizenship and Public Affairs Director for Microsoft.
And I saw on your site there's a number of different ways that schools can work with you. I see Office 365 for Education, and I know that at the Society of Manufacturing Engineers, where I am, we love Office 365. I got to believe this is a great resource for schools and educators. Right?
Absolutely. And that is relatively new that's available for free for students and teachers around the world. So that's, you know, another element of Youth Spark. We also have, when you mentioned education, a couple things that I just wanted to bring up.
Shelley, can I have you pause for just a second?
Sure.
We need to take a quick break. When we come back, let's wrap up our conversation because I think there's much more to talk about here.
I think there's.
I want to have parents understand how they can get their kids in contact with this and really take advantage of this as well. We'll be back in just a minute to continue this conversation on the Youth Spark program from Microsoft here on the Internet Advisor. Delighted that you were able to join us here on the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, and the whole posse in studio here. And by the way, welcome to the folks who listen to us on the Michigan Talk Network. Folks out there in the Grand Rapids area listening to us on WJRW 1340 AM on Sundays. Nice to have you aboard with us. And we'll be saying hello to some of the other folks who listen out there, as well as the folks who listen to us normally on our flagship station WJR and all enjoying us on the podcast here. Glad to have you with us. And by the way, welcome once again to Shelley Stern Gratch. She is the Citizenship and Public Affairs Director for Microsoft. And we've been talking in our previous segment about Youth Spark, which is a remarkable program they have got going, a really global program to help young people. And the way they're focused in three different areas, education, employment, and entrepreneurship. We've been talking about that. And Shelley, what I wanted to do, first of all, thank you again for being with us here.
My pleasure.
To talk with you a little bit about, as we have parents listening to us now and grandparents and relatives, they're kind of asking, so how do I get my young person connected with these resources?
Absolutely.
Where do they connect?
Okay, so the easiest way is through the Youth Spark Hub, which we talked about briefly, which, again, you were mentioning, it's an online space that's broken into three segments based on age group. Obviously, if your child wants to cross over between ages, that's fine. But basically, you can go to Microsoft.com/YouthSpark, YouthSpark. And there's several programs. We were just talking before the break about education. I just wanted to highlight a couple for you.
Yes.
One of them we mentioned earlier was Office 365 for Education.
Right.
So clearly that would be something that you could look at as an option. We have a marvelous
Excuse me, for people who may not are aware of that, what that is like a cloud-based version of the whole Microsoft Office suite.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So that's exactly what
that's
it is.
Free, folks. We're talking
free, folks.
Nada in Spanish, nothing.
and it's even
better than that.
It's even better than that because you get online SharePoint for
Notes.
The classroom.
Notes,
and,
I think, as well.
But it's really a great program. Link is a great communication tool. I was on it today with someone, And I was actually on it from my cell phone, which was really cool.
Oh, that really is cool.
Yeah, actually, that is a pretty neat feature that I use a lot myself. And as we think about you mentioned parents earlier. So there's a couple suggestions that I would give. Now, first of all, if you go to the Youth Spark Hub, what you'll see is a lot of links. So then you link into these other programs. And as you might have seen because you've been there, there's probably over 20 different programs that we're, again, pulling together globally. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple that I would recommend for parents to get started on. The first one is our digital literacy curriculum. Mm-hmm. Yep. Digital literacy curriculum, again, is free. It's in over 30 languages. And what it does is it provides for the parents, for the grandparents, for the student, basic, intermediate, and then we call it advanced, but it's still pretty much in that, you know, easy to learn mm-hmm. format of digital literacy training. So here's your mouse, here's your PC. Then it'll go into here's the various office applications. So here's how to learn words so you can write a resume. Mm-hmm. And then it builds up into, you know, here's how to search the internet.
Okay.
All of these are available for, again, not just students, but for parents, adults, anybody. We have a program called Partners in Learning, which is a long-standing program worldwide that provides professional development for school leaders and educators to learn about new approaches in classroom. I think that's a great place for parents to just simply review the documentation in there, and then when they're having parent-teacher meetings, you know, bring this up to their child's teacher, and just to make sure that kind of discussion about 21st century classroom skills is being discussed between parents and teachers.
Okay.
Another great one is Skype in the Classroom. You may know that Microsoft purchased Skype. And, you know, we all know that all of our kids are using Skype.
They sure are.
So we're thrilled about that. I remember my daughter put it on Facebook. Yay, Microsoft rocks. You know, they bought Skype. So Skype in the Classroom, again, we're building this and tying it into the Youth Spark Hub. It's a free global community for teachers to connect their students with both other students and with guest speakers. And we're working really hard to bring in organizations to be the guest speakers, you know, especially organizations in science, technology, engineering, and math. So that's another great place for parents to get engaged. So I think there's so many places for both parents and for young people, students, and certainly grandparents that want to assist in this to get engaged at, again, those three categories of elementary, teen, and then young adult.
Shelley, you know, I'm looking on the site, and there's, as you said, there's so many neat opportunities for not only individual kids, but for schools and other academic institutions. I'm looking at DreamSpark.
So let me tell you about DreamSpark. So you'll notice the spark theme.
Yes, I
do. So DreamSpark, basically, think of it as helping to create the next generation of developers,
mm-hmm.
People that, of course, Microsoft would love to hire as they get the skills. But also it leads into that discussion we had earlier about entrepreneurship. So DreamSpark, again, is free. It provides an entire suite of developer software.
Typically,
what we do is partner with a community college or a college or university so that we work with them and they identify the students that have the capacity and the initiative. And then we work with them to provide them access to the software development tools. So that's what DreamSpark
that
is
really
all about.
Really is cool. Cal?
You know, Cal asks another question, I've been following a little bit Henry Ford Academy, which is part of our Center for Creative Studies here.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to believe that they're plugged in. If not, they sure should be. So we'll have to help them.
There's a whole lot of creative.
There really are.
Center for Creative Design.
And that's only blocks away.
Yeah,
right?
I know. Cal?
You know, I notice off that same site, I spun off to another link for the Imagine Cup.
Sure, sure.
Which looks like a really cool sort of thing that's going on. Now, when the students create an app, does that app, is that something that they are able to market, or does that become part of Microsoft and then they win a prize? How does that work?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, but I can find out and get back to you on that.
That's fair enough.
But,
I'm sorry.
But let me tell you a little bit about Imagine Cup. So Imagine Cup is probably one of the coolest programs that we have. Basically, it's, again, a global competition. Typically, it's for college students, but we do provide access to high school students as well. And the students compete using Microsoft technology to solve a big societal challenge. So I've seen some of the students that have been winners in their categories, and one of them actually was it was actually something that they developed where a student who was blind could basically be taking notes in class. And the technology they developed would transcribe, you know, what they heard into Braille, into the written word, so that they could then basically take their notes and keep up with the other students. And the way Imagine Cup works is we would work with the university, you know, whether it's in Oakland or a Wayne State or University of Michigan, and we'd have a, you know, a team leader, and they'd identify students who have, again, this computer science acumen or interest, and this, then the teams develop technology to solve, you know, a particular category of problem that we provide to them. And then it's done, we have contests, competitions that are done locally and then regionally and then for the country and then globally. So it's really, really quite a wonderful experience all the way around.
You know, I got to mention BizSpark.
Okay. our entrepreneur would.
That looks like something that really is targeted at especially all these kids that they look at their parents and they go, I don't want to go work for the man. I want to start my own company.
Yeah. That is
very cool.
Yeah. So BizSpark again. You know, if you think almost of a succession as a student or a young person matures, that they might start out learning, working with the DreamSpark developer tools, right?
Right.
And get proficient, come up with a great idea, whether it's through working on Imagine Cup or simply on their own or working with one of our nonprofit partners that I mentioned earlier. And then BizSpark is a program that, again, provides free software to startups. There's some...
I love it.
Yeah, there's some contingencies. You know,
sure.
You have to be under a certain amount of sales and you have to be in a certain area that makes sense and matches the program. But basically, Microsoft wants to be there with them as they're developing their business and working on the Microsoft platform.
Sure.
So we're trying to jumpstart them and make it easy for them.
Sure, grow them into real customers, right?
Exactly.
You know, something that I was just listening to a podcast this week, and it was something I really wasn't aware of. Gary probably, I'm sure, is much more. But then in the enterprise area, there's so much that Microsoft does. There's an Azure program that I heard about.
And Shelley could talk about it, but it's in the cloud. I was talking about it this morning. I mean, it's on my link call. So it's Microsoft is doing a great many things, not only to help students in the case of YouthSpark, but a lot of us that are trying to get ahead in business.
Well, it sounds, Shelley, that like with Microsoft's help, a lot of people could begin at a very young age.
Absolutely.
Well, kids and move
that
right
I
up.
Think is the point. I mean, you all understand, I'm sure many of our listeners understand, you know, how technology is impacting our lives. I think the key on this is to make it transformative, you know, so that it really can impact,
you folks are doing it, and I want to thank you so much, Shelley Stern Gratch, for being with us. Thank you, and thank the Microsoft as well. And thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown and my company here bringing you our conversation with Microsoft today about a great program that YouthSpark. It's kind of like, as we were unraveling it all, was like a Christmas present that's got better and better as it went along. By the way, if you go to internetadvisor.net, you will find a whole bunch of resources there about the YouthSpark. As a matter of fact, what I did was I put the whole information about the Youth Hub as a separate resource. We have online resources mentioned during our show. Look down. You'll find the link to the YouthSpark Hub there, including there's another one up above that where it says YouthSpark just before Shelley Stern Gratch's name in our rundown, and that'll take you to the general Microsoft site. But the YouthSpark Hub that we were talking about, where it shows the resources for younger kids, teens, and for young adults, is linked off of that as well. Ed was helping me a little while earlier on. We talked to you guys about the fact that this week I had this terrible thing where I inadvertently drowned a wonderful MacBook Pro laptop in a bunch of copies.
You didn't drown it.
Well, I thought I had it. It came back with little multiple.
You gave it a lightweight baptism, and it's fine.
You tried to drown it, actually.
Well, but for a moment there, the eyes weren't blinking. There was no pulse.
Yeah.
What is it with you and electronic equipment?
I don't know.
Uh-oh. Something came up on your screen.
What is it?
It's a coffee cup. Oh, it's Java loading.
Oh, Java's loading.
That's nasty. That's nasty. Well, Ed, you were looking for something in there that we were talking about what to do. You know, you shouldn't be having any liquids around your computer, period. And mine, I have to say, it wasn't that I had anything next to it that stepped. It was completely accidental that it poured in on top of it. But the point is that there are things you can do to protect your computer from it. And if you like work around a place where you get cups of coffee or whatever, mm-hmm. you can do some things to protect your keyboard.
Yeah, you can get a like a keyboard skin that goes over it, because there's only a few areas on your computer where moisture can get in, and that's in the keyboard, maybe the USB or fan slots, maybe where your CD player is. But those are those are usually on the side. It's the horizontal surfaces that usually is going to cause the damage. And if you have one of those silicone skin shields,
mm-hmm.
That'll cover up about, how many, 96 holes
on your keyboard? Yeah, yeah.
Well, and Cal, you were saying to me it was fortunate that the coffee didn't get on top of, because it had some cream in it, didn't get on top of the keyboard, because
yep.
they could really gum things up. Then
yeah, because what it ends up doing is make your keys stick.
Oh, Lord.
And then you generally, you're pretty much stuck with, you know, replacing the keyboard and the machine, and that could get to be a little costly, depending on what type of computer it is.
Right,
yeah. You know, so the skin actually is kind of is literally like a skin that's a little silicon strip that fits over it. I'm looking at overstock.com, Ed, was where you led me.
Yep.
And they can go anywhere from like 20. I'm looking at these are skins for the MacBook Pro.
Yeah, and I've seen them for $5, $4.99. Yeah.
These are like $24, but then there's down below one for $7. And I'm sure that, yeah, $5.
I see, and you can get them for your HPs and your Dells
yep,
and your IBM.
Yep. So it's a good investment if you work in some area where you've got moisture, you know, kind of inevitably, if you're working at a desk, you have a cup of coffee or something might spill it.
And try a couple of them, because different ones will give you different, the word to use is tactile feel.
Oh, yeah,
if you're a real sensitive typer, you may want to try two different brands just to see whether or not you like that particular brand and that sort of thing. Me, I type with boxing gloves. It doesn't matter.
You know, I'm wondering. See, I don't normally type on the keyboard. I actually have a Bluetooth keyboard that I do use, because I have my laptop on a little tray sitting up.
Perfect candidate for Saran wrap for you.
There you go. There you go.
That's cheaper.
That's a lot cheaper. Even cheaper. Just, that's a better one. Yeah. That's a better piece of advice. By the way,
I wouldn't. I don't know about that, because on some of these they actually draw the air. They could draw some of the air from that area.
Well, that's
cooling.
But this is a wireless keyboard, so I don't think that it produces too much.
I think the smartest and most prudent thing, and in your particular case, it wasn't intentional or anything like that, and you were just traveling. But the smartest thing is, if you're going to work around your computer, you know, if you got to have a liquid there, keep it at a safe distance so that you don't end up, you know, spilling it inadvertently on there.
Because you can lose everything. Now, I have to say something, by the way, Cal, that you had warned me ahead of time. And folks, matter of fact, Rick Broida, our gadget guy, when he saw my thing, I was like, oh, I killed it. What am I going to do? I mean, it was like I was Chicken Little. You know, the sky was falling. In any case, he asked me immediately, do you have a backup? And I have to say, yes, I regularly backed up with Time Machine, which is the backup, and I backed up to an external, small external hard drive. But you had told me, Cal, about doing an image of the file. In other words, there's a piece of software that for about $30, it's called Super Duper.
Well, actually, you can get it for free.
You get it for free.
And you can use it, but if you spend the $30, you know, to help these folks who are developing these fine packages out there, you get more features that are unlocked in a particular software.
I like doing that as well. And among those is that you can make an image of it. Now, we should explain what an image is when you make an image of a computer.
The difference in this particular case...
Between backup and an image.
You've got two different types of images, too. You have the type of image that you can use something like Acronis on the Windows side of the game, which will image it will take a copy of the drive and put it into a compressed file. And then you have a clone, which is a little bit different. And this is what Super Duper is doing. It takes the entire hard drive, takes the image copy of it, puts it onto an external hard drive, but it makes it a bootable image.
Right.
So therefore, if your internal hard drive was to go bad, you could plug this into the USB or FireWire port on that machine, and then on the Mac specifically, and say, Mac, boot off that external drive, and it boots up just like it's on the inside of the
computer.
Matter
of fact, and I did that to test it. Matter of fact, when you finish doing the Super Duper clone, it says, do you want to boot off of that? And I did it, and it worked just perfectly. So, folks, that is just to make a very important distinction here. You can be backing up as I was, but if you don't have that clone You're going to have to do a lot of work to get the whole thing back.
Well, it's going to take you longer to do it using a time machine restoration, but it will work.
Yes.
And it is possible. But like I tell everybody, especially in my weekly blog that I stick out on the net, a backup is only as good as the restore that it can do. So you can back up till you're blue in the face, but if you can't restore a backup, it does you no good at all. So periodically, take and test those backups and see if you can actually restore.
You know, have you guys run into that too? That I've done backups before when I've gone to retrieve something from the backup, suddenly it didn't work.
In business, a lot of times with tape, especially in the olden days, although tape isn't necessarily dead yet, but you would file your tape.
I still use tape.
Yeah, you file your tapes away, and then all of a sudden you realize, heck, nothing's been on them for the last year and a half or something. So you always test your tapes. And personally, I just back up to hard drive. I never had a problem.
I've also sometimes found that they had like a proprietary format that you would back up to.
Yes, you know, yeah, that is the case. But if you use, it's important to test.
That's the key.
Test once a year and try to restore some data to an alternate area in your hard drive, just to make sure that at least I can restore some of my data. I may not be able to,
you know, my programs,
the clone and stuff like that. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, but you've got those pictures, you got those documents, the key files that you want. And that really, when everything's done, I thought, you know, I hadn't even crossed my mind. I have 8,000 photos.
Well, okay. Here's something to make you keep your shorts busy tonight. Now you've backed them up on that external hard drive.
Yeah.
Wonderful idea. Where's that hard drive at?
Right next to the computer.
Yeah.
And if your house goes up in flames, and let's say you get out without any problem,
you've
lost everything. So that is the reason why you want to have a second backup and stored off-site, which basically means a heck of a way from where it originally
was.
And the photos are real easy because you want to share them with family. So you send them. So my sister regularly grabs my hard drive and downloads some more stuff to hers and vice versa. And we sync up our hard drives and I have a hard drive just for photos. And that works.
Did you know with Apple now that you can share photo streams?
Yeah.
Yes.
That is fascinating. So that everybody then in a party can share the photo streams and be able to pick off the pictures they
and
want.
And sometimes that's good and sometimes it's not. Yeah. You know how many photos my daughter takes?
Well, the other thing too is with my wife Jenny, it's like, you're not keeping that picture, are you? Please. If I put something on Facebook, heaven help me. It has to go by the sensor first. Hey, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, there is another hour, and I certainly hope that you'll stick around for that. If you're listening to our podcast, it'll be just a brief moment. We'll be right back with it, and we're going to be answering some of the questions that you sent in through email. If you don't know how to get that to it, simply go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage. Right-hand corner, there's a Contact Us button. Click on that. You put all the information in there, and your question from whatever station you're listening to us and anywhere in the country, whether you're retired in Florida or right here in Michigan, will get back to us, and we'll get to answering those coming up in just a little bit.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. Have a question? Post it in our discussion forums on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Welcome to Hour Number 2 of the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown. I am the co-host here, along with a whole bunch of wonderfully talented people. My posse, Gary Baker and Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, here in this hour to answer your questions that you sent us by email. That's right. We'll tell you how you can get your questions in. And we'll be even talking with some of you folks as we call you back and see if we can get to the bottom of your particular concerns. That's coming up this hour on the Internet Advisor. It's a delight to have you folks with us. I know you got here. You're a determined group of people. You found our podcast, and you maybe have subscribed to it through iTunes, and good for you. You don't have to give it another thought. It's there in your podcast aggregator. Or you might, for instance, go to our homepage at internetadvisor.net and click on the RSS feed, which means anything that we post up there will show up as an email to you, and you can then download it from there. Or there are some of you who have learned that by Sunday night, these programs, which we record on Saturday afternoons, are every Saturday afternoon we're here with our team talking with people. Those things are up on the website there, and you can download them directly and listen to a compressed version of our two-hour show and to get the benefit of our guests and also answers to the questions that we bring up.
Yes, we have the Facebook site as well,
yes.
And one of the questions a few weeks ago, or one of the comments, was a response to something that you posted about Apple, changing its pin configuration on the new iPhone 5.
Oh, yes, the connectors. Yeah, the connectors, yeah.
And, Kevin Murphy, who's a great fan and listener to the show, responded to you, and then I jumped in and said, yeah, I know it's expensive, but at least they're updating the technology and blah, 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 trying to take the real high road and everything. Well, I had to go out and buy an accessory, and it cost me $30, which should have cost me $9.99, right? And I'm going, Kevin was right.
Get the adapter to the adapter? You know, you can put it on the end of, am I right, Cal, that they sell the, like, it's a little gizmo that you put on the end of the old adapters that makes it fit into the phone?
Oh, no, I should have bought one of those. I just bought...
What are you talking about for the new iPhone?
Between the old the 30-pin to the 9-pin.
Yeah, there's an adapter for it. That is correct, that you can buy from Apple.
It's a little tiny little thing that you put on the end of the old one,
I believe,
right?
That is correct.
Yeah, but what did you buy that cost you $30?
So I just, I needed something for the car, right? So I needed
an auto charger.
So it cost me $30. Kevin Murphy was right.
You know, you can always feel good, Gary, that you're doing something to build the economy.
I can give more money to Apple.
Take solace.
Yeah, I can feel really good about that.
Take solace in that.
Hey, every little bit gets them closer to $1 trillion.
I like the small connector, right? I think that's great that they upgraded it from that standpoint.
And I was, by the way, one of the comments was when they finally got the phone in hand and people tore it apart. You know, they had the tear down sites that take it apart to see what makes it tick. They were saying there's no way they could have had the big connector in there and packed all the stuff they needed to get in. They just couldn't do it. No,
right.
No. And matter of fact, this is apparently significantly different because I think there's some electronics in that connector. It's not a dumb connector anymore, I think.
Correct.
There's something in there that's working.
So
right?
I should feel better about spending $30 for it?
It's not like a coupling on the end of your hose.
The part I like is now they have something new to whine about. It's like, oh, they have this 30-pin proprietary connector, yada, yada, yada. Now it's going to be like, oh, they've got this small connector, but it costs so much money. And I always say that wonderful thing. You know something? You just don't have to buy it.
Ed, you quoted him before on that. Remember that on the way over here you were saying? Cal will just say you don't have to buy it.
You just don't have to buy it.
It's a great word of wisdom. All right, we've got folks who are waiting. We're going to be talking in just a moment with Carla. And let me just tell you how this works. When we are preempted on our home station, which is WJR in Detroit, 760 AM, we normally would take calls there, that is most of the year. But during the sports season, MSU plays football and then the basketball season, we're often preempted and sometimes shifted around. But the cool thing is we're still here. And the way you can get your question to us, and particularly you folks out there who are listening to us on our affiliates, like the ones in Kalamazoo and Lansing and Grand Rapids and all over the state, you can send us your question by going to internetadvisor.net and then clicking on the Contact Us button and filling that information. It comes to us. The guys get to look at it during the week. Sometimes we'll answer it immediately, but also sometimes what we'll do is we'll talk with you on the day that we record our program, like our guest right now, Carla from Lake Orion. How you doing, Carla?
Pretty good. How about you guys?
Very well. Thank you. You emailed us during the week about some custom software that you have. You're a medical transcriptionist, right?
Yes.
Okay. What is the special software, first of all, that you have?
Well, it's not special software. I use Microsoft Office.
Okay.
But, and I've got Office XP, which I believe is version 2003.
Yes.
I use a lot of auto-text, auto-correct, I have a medical spell check software that I use, but I can put that in the new version of Office.
Okay.
My problem is I've got all this custom stuff built in there, like doctor addresses and you know, the way the doctors speak, they repeat a lot of stuff, so you just make it auto text and then you don't have to type it every time. It would take me months to rewrite all of this stuff. And right now everything's working fine, but I understand if I buy a new computer with the new version of Windows, I have to buy a whole new version of Microsoft Office, which is bad enough.
Well, first of all, you don't have to do that. So that'll help you.
Really?
Yes.
So my Office XP, I can put in the new version of Windows?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
It'll work.
I was under the impression that it wouldn't work and I was going to have to buy a whole new version of Word.
No, it should just install. The difficulty comes, and Cal reminded me of this, is how do you transfer your settings? I mean, your custom dictionary, your custom, your autocorrect, and those are actually stored in your user folder. On Windows XP, it's stored under Documents and Settings. your username under local settings folder, and then underneath the Microsoft applications folder. I mean, there are three files you would need to grab, and I don't remember what they are.
None of us use XP anymore, right, so we can't look it up.
Well, they're the same file names you would use with Office 2010. One of them is called custom.dic for dictionary.
Normal.doc is what you're going to need.
But what in the calendar, what was the utility you said you can use?
Well, if you go to the start and then go to Programs, Microsoft Office, Microsoft Office Tools, and then they have Microsoft Office, whatever year it is, Save My Settings Wizard. That'll show you it'll do it for you automatically. But if you hang on the line, I'll fill you in on it.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick pause. When we come back, we'll fill in more of that, okay? Well, we're here and we're trying to stump the techs.
Well, you know, it was so funny because you said, oh, you know, we look at them and then, you know, we talk about them on
our emails, the emails,
the emails when they come in. And that gives us a little bit of a head start. None of us looked at them at all until we got in the studio.
Yeah, well, I did look at these.
Yeah, they love to work, you know, right on the bleeding edge.
It was kind of like, yeah, it seemed cheating somehow to, you know, have a head start at figuring this out.
Because normally, what Gary's referring to is normally during the season when we have live calls coming in on our flagship station, WJR.
The first time we get to hear about them is when they ask.
But Carla is with us from Lake Orion. She asked the question. You have the medical transcription business, and you've had a lot of macros you built. You were using Office XP, which is one of the older versions of Office, Microsoft Office, 2003 probably. And anyway, the doctors have conferred between times now. So that's where we're back here. And we
still can't agree.
But we never could. So.
But now the question was this. You're moving from an older machine. You want to go to a new one with, I'm going to guess, Windows 7 operating system, I hope.
I don't even know what the latest one is. I think it's 7. Yes. But I'm just scared to death to get a new computer because I was under the impression that Office XP would not work, and it's like, okay, great. They're going to make me spend another $400 to buy Microsoft Office.
Here's the good news, by the way, on this. Excuse me just for interrupting you there, and just for everybody out there. I've been hearing about Office 2013 coming, or some of the newer versions of Office.
Right.
That whole business of spending hundreds of dollars is going to go away. Okay. I mean, there'll be like a yearly fee that you'll pay in some of these cases.
Well, actually, they're going to the same model that Adobe is using, and it's basically it's pay as you use.
Right.
So you'd say, oh, gee, I want to be able to use this part of Office and this part of this
Office. Well, Cal, no, I was hearing of something even more different, and we'll have to wait until it all gets cleared up. But essentially, where you pay a yearly fee, like $100.
A subscription fee.
A subscription fee.
Right. Yeah.
But you would have access to the whole suite then.
Yes.
And it would be in the cloud, I guess, right?
Yes.
Yes, you would be in the cloud. So, in other words, you wouldn't have to spend like $500-$600 for that whole Office suite that you did in the past.
See, it has to be in the cloud because they get to turn it off if you don't pay them.
It doesn't have to be in the cloud because what you do is you download the app directly to your machine. And what happens is while your subscription is working fine, it periodically calls home and says, hey, am I still live? And they'll say yes. And then if it gets to the point where you haven't renewed, it goes, am I still live? It goes, no, you shut down, and it shuts down.
Because if
it had to run those applications, you wouldn't want to run Photoshop over the cloud.
Not Photoshop, but we run Office apps all the time over the cloud.
Right.
And in Office 365, that's all online.
Well, let's get back to helping Carla.
Right.
But anyway, Carla, is
we're helping everybody.
The point is you have to put a whole ton of money. Yeah, go ahead.
You know what the thing? If you get a new computer, you're not going to be dissatisfied with it. You're probably going to be coming from what? You're probably running Windows XP with Office XP?
Yes,
okay.
Currently.
So get the new laptop or a new computer and then throw the same version of Office on the other one. And then you can use Microsoft's File and Transfer Wizard that allows you to copy all your data and settings from your old computer to your new. And one of the things it'll copy over is your Office settings, your custom dictionary, your
macros,
your auto correction,
your templates,
and I believe those autocorrects are it's an autocorrect list, it's an ACL file, and it stands for auto correction list.
Right.
As opposed to access control list, which is
I've used the Save My Settings Wizard in the past, but unfortunately, I've been hearing from friends that have Office 2007, Microsoft did away with the Save My Settings Wizard. And so I thought, okay, now if I'm going to be stuck having to buy
that's what Cal was talking about.
Right.
Okay, I'm talking about Microsoft File and Transfer Wizard that comes with every computer that Microsoft makes. And what it does, it copies your data, your printers, and your Office settings.
Okay.
To from your old computer to your new computer. And if that fails, I mean, at least you still have your old computer, and it say if it fails, okay,
right,
that it copied your data, but your ACLs and your custom dictionaries aren't there. Microsoft has articles, or you could just Google it and say, how do I copy my Microsoft Word autocorrect list?
Gotcha.
Or, you know,
okay,
from my old computer to the new.
Right.
And, you know, I've just found a dozen articles that talk about that.
But
so there's no downtime because you still have your old computer. And then you
right
can pick away at how you copy those over.
Right. Okay.
But the file and transfer wizard should take care of that.
Yeah. In other words, it should do it pretty seamlessly with you. So you don't have to be concerned about that.
Yes.
And by the way, Ed mentioned something. You're moving from an older machine. You're going to get a bump in speed and performance, especially Windows 7 is so sweet.
Right.
It's one of the best-selling they've ever had.
And what the point I wanted to make is that you want to have Office installed on the other computer, the new computer, after you, or before you run the file and transfer wizard.
Okay.
That way,
the old Office.
You want to, try the old Office first. Get that working. I mean,
for about a week,
maybe you're violating Microsoft's, licensing because you have your old computer running Office and your new one. But you may like the new Office suite. I mean, after you get it working, you may decide to install.
But hang on
Office
a second.
Suite.
She's saying she doesn't want to buy a new version of Office.
Yeah, she doesn't want to.
Yeah.
But
that's what I was going to say. Yeah, if I don't have to, I mean, I've already shelled out nearly $400 for the version I have now.
Then after it's working and your customizations
and
are working,
great.
Uninstall
I have no issues with it.
Uninstall it on your old computer and you're still...
Now, quick question.
Now you're legal.
But a quick question, guys. Would Carla have to take her installed disks then and on the new computer put the Office XP on there?
That's what I just...
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, I just want to make clear.
Install...
No. Because those new computers will also come with, like, trial versions of Office.
And she should try... You should uninstall those.
That was my point.
If they do come that way.
Yeah.
A lot
some
of them
don't.
Do. Some don't.
Right.
But go into the control panel under Programs and Features, uninstall the trial versions.
Okay.
Or run Microsoft's utility that they sometimes provide. The OEM provides us, uninstall this trial version.
Good. I just wanted to clarify that. Yep.
Very good point, Foster.
Yeah,
and then I can take my XP disks and just load them into the new
computer. It a floppy disk?
They're CDs.
Oh, thank goodness.
Oh, floppy. CDs.
The original floppies that were actually floppy. All right, Carla. I hope that helps
you
out.
Awesome. That does. That really eases my mind. Thank
you
so much.
I'm glad we could do that for you. Okay. You take care. Okay. Thank you so
you
much.
Too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, I'm glad. That's why I stopped you guys, because I know that when you buy these computers, often they have trial versions on there.
No, good point.
And you can start using it. Think, oh, wow, I get this. Oops. It only works for 60 days. And now I got to cough up a whole lot of money. All right. Well, we got somebody who is, it's interesting. His name is Paul Smith, kind of after namesake of one of our very famous personalities on our home station, WJR. This, I don't think, is Paul W. Smith, however. This is a different Paul Smith. How you doing, Paul?
Hello.
Glad to have you with us here on the Internet Advisor. And you have some concerns about the Internet Explorer that you're using. Tell us what your concerns are.
Yes. I recently upgraded to a newer computer,
mm-hmm,
installed Windows Pro 7. Windows 7 Pro,
right. Mm-hmm.
And Internet Explorer 9.
Okay.
as soon as I did that, I checked on the Internet, and as soon as you go from a page within the Internet, mm-hmm, to a link within the Internet page, you get a blank. And that's all.
Okay, so the links... When, in other words, you get this new computer, you get on the Internet. Let's say, what is your homepage that you go to?
Oh, I use a Dell page that I've used.
Okay, good. So you go to that page. You get to that successfully, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you were able to get to the Internet. You get to that page you want. But as soon as you start clicking links within that page, you're saying?
Right. Say, for instance, right on the homepage, I've got the weather.
Oh, okay.
Okay, mm-hmm, if I click on that weather to link to a more wider information.
Sure. Look at another city, sure.
Mm-hmm. I just get a blank.
Now, is that only happen when you start with that particular web page?
No. No, it happens regardless of what, if I go to MSN web page or any
of them. Okay, good. I just wanted to clarify that. So, regardless of what page you start with, you have those concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Ed?
Right.
Are we going to say something?
The first thing I would try is Internet Explorer has the ability to set it back to factory defaults.
Yes.
So, have you tried that?
Did that.
Okay. So Have you tried right mouse clicking on the link and selecting open in a new window or open in a new tab?
Done that.
Okay, and it still fails.
Yes. I have found an answer, a sort of an answer.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, I can hear the music in the background, so we'll play a little suspense here. You hang on to that answer,
sure,
and we'll come back in just a moment. We'll talk about the answer you found and see if we got any of our own here.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much. You're listening to the Internet Advisor. We're coming up with some answers for folks here as we solve their tech problems. I want to take a moment to thank some people who are slaving away behind the scenes here. Andy Nichols, thank you so much. Our Lady of the Phones. And Rich Lusinski.
Smiling Lady of the Phones.
And Rich Lusinski is doing a great job engineering for us. Thank you, folks, for being here every week and helping us do this. Yes, we are here every week, consistently, the Internet Advisor on the air for you. And we got the full crew here. We got Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson in studio. And we're answering a question for Paul, who has been having trouble, got a brand new spanking computer, nice Windows 7 computer, and went to use Internet Explorer 9 and found that he was able to get on the Internet, but once he got there, couldn't make any of the links inside of the web pages work. In other words, you would click on them and would go anywhere, get a blank page. So we've been kind of noodling behind the scenes here, guys. Who wants to pick it up? Don't all of you talk at once.
It sounds like a difficult problem. Have you got any additional plugins or add-ons, like toolbars, within the Internet Explorer?
No. I'll tell you what I've done. I've gone on, at least 100 Internet sites that claim to have an answer. None of them seem to work.
Okay.
But I did hit on one that gives me a workaround. There are two versions of Internet 9. There's the 32-bit and the 64-bit.
Uh-huh. Right.
And if you load the 64-bit and run it as the administrator, the links work. However, you can't do anything with YouTube.
Oh, now that is interesting.
What do you mean
And you
by
go
that?
To YouTube, and they say, sorry, but we don't have a 64-bit version.
Version of the Flash.
Oh, that's right.
So, you know what? Have you tried logging in and using a different user account on that computer? Have you tried creating a new user account on there?
Yep, done that.
Have you tried just reloading IE?
Yeah, we came to the conclusion over the break that it's not supposed to do this.
that was brilliant.
There's probably a corrupted file, and while it might not be obvious, or at least it wasn't obvious to us, which file was corrupted, that probably the easiest thing is just uninstall IE9, which will drop you back to IE8, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then turn around and install IE9 again.
Good try, guys, but I did that too.
Did that too.
Oh, oh wow.
Darn.
Now, did you power up and power when you uninstalled it?
Mm-hmm.
Did you power up and then power back down again?
Yes.
And then power back up?
Yeah, anytime I do an install, I do that.
Okay, good. Yeah. Boy, you're getting all the tricks. That's great.
Do like I do. I just drive over to the Apple store, get me a Mac, and call it a day.
Oh!
or he could, you know, he could use the 64-bit to download Mozilla Firefox or Chrome.
Yeah, I'm using those two also as workarounds. You know, for
now. By the way, excuse
me. Are those
me.
Working for you?
Yeah, that was my question. Are those working?
Yes.
See, now this is interesting, and you actually are proving a point that we make regularly, and that is you need to have more than one browser.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because just for troubleshooting, but in your particular case, because you're going to be horribly frustrated otherwise.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The other browsers are working. Then it is something in Internet Explorer.
Well, it may be Internet Explorer, or it could be some DLLs within the Windows operating system.
Yeah, many of the answers on the Internet say, you know, your DLLs aren't registering, and there's little script programs here and there to register 98 different DLLs.
Yes. There's probably
work.
Only 16. You've tried them.
Didn't
I was going to say there's about 16 DLLs you can do.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you do a Red Server 32, you re-register those with Windows. Mm-hmm. One of them is like URL mon.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Is he running Windows 7?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, can he do the same thing that I used to be able to do with Windows in the past? If you take the install CD and put it back into the machine, and it'll start up the installation. It'll say, do you want to repair this version of Windows?
Oh, yeah.
You can say yes. It doesn't eliminate your data.
That's right.
Repairs your operating system.
Right.
And then once it's done, then run the updates against it and see whether or not that fixes it.
Right. Right. Yep. Didn't work.
Oh, you tried it.
Boy, you're trying all the good. You're cursed. Paul, you're doing great.
We are the court of last resort, it sounds
then I
like.
Then I got to go back to the last suggestion.
Yes,
yeah, so
I can trust you guys.
Well, and Paul, then you obviously then also know that as many times as we try to tell people, and lots of other people have had the same message, there are some developers that still develop websites that, because of some of the ActiveX controls that you can get and use in IE, that you can go ahead and use a different browser, but you sometimes don't see the same thing that an IE9 user would see
right.
on the website. And that's
mm-hmm.
the problem, right? And it's right. not your problem, yeah. but it is. It's our problem, all of ours.
Yeah, the strange one is the difference between the 32-bit and the 64-bit system. The 64-bit system will work with links. The 32-bit system will not link, but it works with YouTube.
So yeah, because of YouTube's Flash,
the
Flash player.
Yes.
So
right.
That's the difference, is the Flash player that they have. You know, guys, when you
so we just have to get YouTube to upgrade their Flash player to 64-bit, and we're set.
Yeah, I figured that was it, but. I don't know anybody.
Well, you have stumped the chumps here. I tell you, this is
doing all the right things.
Wow. We will commend you on having made all the other right moves.
Well, there's one thing he could try, and he could download from Microsoft Windows XP and that runs inside of Windows 7.
Oh!
So Windows XP virtual mode. And you could download that so that way you can have a virtual version of Windows XP. It only takes 100 megabyte that you download it. And so within that virtual window, then you can run Internet Explorer 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 mm-hmm. in that version of XP and see if it works.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have Windows Pro, so I can do that as a compatibility thing, can't I?
I believe you can.
Yes.
Yes. I believe you
yeah,
can.
Yeah, should be.
So,
yeah.
But that is, it's a download from Microsoft,
yes.
right?
Windows uh-huh. Yeah, I'll look up for the exact name. But
so that we may have something you haven't tried yet.
Okay.
and that will be a miracle in itself.
Well, I've got a free week. What the heck?
Yeah, why not?
It sounds like you've spent a couple months doing
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it's called Windows XP mode. So if you say download Windows XP mode from Microsoft, it's a 100 megabyte file. You download it and...
And then when you open it up, how does it work? You run, you open it up as a virtual...
Window, yeah. You just do start... Mm. And select the Windows, XP mode
mm-hmm.
or virtual mode, and just launches. Well, looks
you
like
can
XP.
Also. I can't you step out of Windows 7 and just go into it like a compatibility kind of thing? Am I
step
right?
Step out.
Well, I mean, in other words, you don't have to. Are you talking about talking loading about a like, separate system?
No, I'm talking about it's like a window. It's like running on your
machine.
Mac.
Oh yeah, okay. I got it.
If you want to run
yes.
XP or
yes.
on or Windows 7
right.
on a
you
Mac,
run a virtual yeah,
yeah
run
you're
a
running
virtual
a virtual
machine.
PC.
Okay.
We just got to hope like heck when he goes to that site to download it doesn't turn into a white screen.
Well, I've used Firefox to download
oh,
a few
okay.
things.
Well, then good.
That
all right,
work.
Then that'll work out fine. Because I would think a Microsoft site should. Take the Microsoft yeah. browser, shouldn't
but
be
you'd
problem.
Be better off going with either Chrome or
yeah.
Mozilla.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I can think of is that possibly the antivirus software on his computer is interfering and intercepting all, links,
What are you using for antivirus?
But he said he reboots.
Norton.
So, well, there you go. So, I
hey,
mean.
Hey, hold it.
But,
how about
but,
this?
But he said he rebuilt his computer, that he reinstalled the operating system.
But how about this, guys? And see what you think of this, Paul, because we know that the Microsoft Security Essentials, MSE for Microsoft,
yes.
works wonderfully.
Right. I also had that one.
Now, but
they don't interfere. I've checked all that jazz.
Did you okay. pull Norton off, though, before you tried it?
No.
Now, here's my thought, along the lines of what Ed's saying.
Possible. It is
that
possible.
If it's the security, if it's your antivirus prop, pull Norton off. Complete. You don't need Norton anyway. Pull it off, and
well, he
run.
Does if he paid $100 for it.
Well,
no, I didn't. It came with the came
with it. There you go.
So I'd say unplug Norton completely.
Okay.
Wipe it out, and then put Microsoft Security Essentials on.
Right. I've got that. Yep. Okay. Yeah. MSE. Yeah.
Are you running them both at the same time?
No, they're separate. I disable Norton.
Okay. Get rid of Norton.
Totally, huh?
Yeah, programs and features, uninstall it. You can always download it from your internet service provider. They'll probably provide you McAfee or Norton anyways.
Mm-hmm. But really what we found...
And then power up, power down, as we talked about earlier, because there will be remnants of Norton left the first time you power back up.
Yeah, exactly. And Norton's notorious for leaving little programs behind.
A lot of them are.
Not if you use them. If you use the Norton uninstaller,
there you go.
Clean it up.
That, I think, is the key there, Paul, to use the Norton uninstaller. Then then we may have taken the one step that we hadn't thought of before, and Ed just triggered that thought in my mind. Get rid of that
other... Actually, it was the first thought, but I don't want to always blame Norton. We give him such a hard time.
We do.
Semantic.
It
works.
But the other thing is, however, that this Microsoft Security Essentials is really working well with Windows 7.
Good.
It really, really works well with it. So, try that. So, there's a couple solutions for it. And let us know by email how things go, okay?
Will do.
All right, Paul. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right.
What a great phone
what
call.
That is so fascinating.
Everything the way he's supposed to do it, too.
I know. And more than most people would have thought to do. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment to take another question. This one's coming from Ron and dealing with some photos on his computer. It's been a delight being with you this week. Oh, there's still a little more time here, so don't go away. We got some other folks to talk with here. My name is Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Kel Carson in studio, and our other crew behind the glass. Just a reminder for you, by the way, regardless of where you listen to the Internet Advisor, and that could be all across the state of Michigan, we are very fortunate to have a wonderful group of affiliates who listen to us in places like Grand Rapids and Lansing on WJIM AM 1240 on Sundays between 2 and 4. And if you're in the Muskegon area, you can hear us both on Saturdays and on Sundays on WKLQ AM at 1490. And if you happen to be on the other side of the state in the Bay Area, that is in Saginaw, WNEM AM 1250 on Sundays from noon until 2 p.m. You get to hear our program. So thank you very much for joining us if you're out those markets. We're very glad to have you with us. And you can get your questions answered as well simply by sending us an email. Go to internetadvisor.net. Click on the Contact Us form and fill in the information there, and we'll get to you and see if we can solve some problems for you. Speaking of those problems, we have another gentleman who emailed us this week, and that is Mr. Run got a hold of us because he's got some problems. He's got photos that just won't open for him. How you doing, Run?
Good evening or afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
That's quite all right.
Yes, the issue I have, when I go to My Pictures and click on any individual picture, yet something that comes up and it says the application has failed to start because MAPI32.dll was not found. Reinstalling the application may fix the problem. Mm-hmm. How do you reinstall it, and what is MAPI32?
What is that beast, Ed? Well,
I believe MAPI is your mail application program interface. For some reason, what it's doing is it's trying to... It sounds like it's associating picture files and trying to send it to like Outlook or something like that, or some email program. Have you tried, what type of email program are you using on your computer? Do you use Outlook at all?
It's Hotmail.
You use Hotmail. So that has nothing to do with that, unless you're using your live mail. So what version of Windows were you running?
XP, and what the pictures I'm trying to download is actually from my camera, where I go and download pictures off my camera to my computer.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah, it's not even through email. It's just pictures I'm downloading off my camera.
So how are you getting this error? Are you double-clicking on the files, or are you just hovering your mouse over the files?
Put my mouse over the file and double-click on it.
Oh, you're double-clicking on it, though?
Yeah.
Okay, what happens when you right-mouse-click on the file? So I'm assuming that you're an explorer. You're going to My Computer or something like that. So what happens when you try right-mouse-clicking on the file and select Open With?
When I right-click and just open it, I get the same thing.
Well, I'm not saying open. I'm saying Open With.
Oh, Open With.
Right.
Yeah, you get a little contextual menu when you do a right-mouse
click.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it says I got various different things I can open it with.
And what you want to do is, at the bottom, you should have something that says Choose Default Program.
Yes, it says choose a program.
Okay, and then it'll bring, now what is the, which is the one that's highlighted right now? It should be Microsoft or Windows Photo Viewer, but what are you seeing?
I'm seeing all of them. That,
what, there's a little box around one that should be highlighted.
When I hit on choose my program?
When you select choose a program.
Okay. Corel Photo Album 6 applications.
Corel.
So that's Corel. The program that's damaged.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
So switch to a different one.
So, yeah, I mean, if you just want to double click and view it, you can use, by default, you could choose another one like Windows Photo Viewer or Google Picasso or something like that. What are some of the other ones?
Earth End.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now it's open. Yeah.
Shazam.
I tried Window Picture Frame or something. Window Picture Text Viewer.
There you go.
There you go.
So, or you could, now you said you were running XP. So, yeah, that would work.
Yeah, okay.
Now, let's just, for the sake of people who are listening, I love these aha moments, especially gratifying with today's program after we really got our noggins knocked around with the one of our other callers. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I was going to say, so what type of camera did you have? And did it come with
a CD
with like photo management software?
If it did, I never downloaded it.
Oh, so there you go. So you've always used the like some default photo viewer, Microsoft's photo viewer, which is
right.
Or something. Okay, well this is.
Now, let's explain what just happened, because people sometimes have this happen where they try to do something on their computer and it doesn't open up, whether it's a document or whatever. And let's just explain for people what the whole business is about, going to and setting the default programs to open certain things. Can you explain what that is?
Well, every program or every file that's on your computer has an extension on it. A DOC file is a Microsoft Word document, a JPG, JPEG, or GIF, or PNG. Those are graphic files. And it's called file association. When you double-click on a file, Microsoft needs to have instructions that says, what program should I open this with? What should I do with this program? And if it's a JPEG, as it is in the camera, Microsoft wants to know what the default program is. At some point, with this person, with Ron's computer, Microsoft Corel was actually made the default photo manager for JPEGs, as an example, or bitmaps. And somehow that's become damaged. You can always give Windows the instructions by saying right mouse clicking on any program like a JPEG file or a document file, and you can right mouse click and select open with, and you could select choose the default program I wish to open this file with. And when you do that, usually it'll present you with a list of programs that it believes have the ability to manage and view this file. Mm-hmm. You know, as an example with JPEG.
One question. Now, once I set that, is it just for that one file he just opened, or is that going to be for every file that has that extension on it when he does this?
Well, that's a good question. There's a checkbox at the bottom of this that says, mm-hmm. always use the selected program I've selected above to open this in the future. So,
oh, terrific. So, yeah, I didn't even see that there. Now I see it.
Yeah, now you see it.
Right.
But,
or you run into the same problem that again. You say, right. I thought I fixed that. No, you got to select that box.
Yeah, you could even use Internet Explorer to open up your graphic files. But you want a picture viewer because that gives you the ability usually with like a flipping the photo and
light manipulation.
Yeah, and manipulation of the program and hitting the next photo. Usually it provides you the ability of arrow to go to the next photo within that directory that you're in.
So is that Mappy 32 only associated with this Corel photo that I've been...
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Mappy is really placed, is mail application program.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure why Corel, which you said was the default program, how it would use that.
Corel, wasn't it I'm thinking of like a paint or a...
It was a drawing program.
It was a drawing program,
but
right.
it was growing in nature. It had gotten to a point where it was almost a combination of a drawing program and a photo manipulation program. Like,
and they also had
Illustrator
and
Photoshop.
Oh, that's
together.
Right.
Yeah, and it also had word processing capability, too.
But it's an old program. It was up for a long time ago.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So do you understand?
Thank you very much.
You're
welcome. You guys fixed the problem.
I like that.
I appreciate it.
I love the ending the program on that kind of a note. Thanks so much, Ron. Appreciate your being with us.
Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, we got a problem solved there. I got to tell you guys something funny that happened the other day. And sometimes, folks, we take time to talk about things that may seem a little simplistic, but it's because, I mean, For some people, the whole thing about the computer is kind of magic. I had a woman in our building call me. They know that I use work with computers. So lady said, would you please come? I went on vacation, and I was using the internet in my apartment wonderfully before, and I came back, and my internet is broken. It doesn't work anymore. When I came back, I found out she never had internet of her own. She was stealing somebody else's Wi-Fi signal. She said, well, so-and-so gave me this neat little antenna that helped me to get the signal. Yeah, right. And that Wi-Fi signal went away now. So now she's having to come up with the money for her own. But sometimes people think kind of magically about the internet. Well, I'm glad we can end on that high note. It's been good to be with you guys. Thank you so much, Ed. Thank you so much, Cal, and Gary as well for being here this week. It's been a lot of fun. Hey, folks, look for us at InternetAdvisor.net. You'll be able to find download this program, which you already did, and every week, starting on Sunday nights. And also find a whole host of information, things we've talked about during the program. We've loaded them in there as well, so you can go back and you can check on some of the things we've talked about as well. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Hey, we will see you again very soon, every week.
You've been listening to a podcast of the second hour of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.